It's time for Supply Chain Now. Broadcasting live from the supply chain capital of the country, Atlanta, Georgia. Heard around the world, Supply Chain Now spotlights the best in all things supply chain. The people, the technologies, the best practices, and the critical issues of the day. And now, here are your hosts.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. Scott Luton, Greg White, and Will Haraway with you here on Supply Chain Now. Welcome to today's show. Greg, how you doing?
I am doing quite well, Scott. How are you?
Doing fantastic. Off on the heels of a wonderful live stream earlier. And Will, how you doing?
Lovely, my friend. Good to see you.
The Cardinals are fighting, and we'll have to talk all about baseball later this week maybe. But today on this show, we have got a next-generation leader in third-party logistics. Outstanding show lined up. And we're all going to be working hard here to increase your supply chain IQ. So more to come on that in just a minute. Quick programming note, Greg, if folks enjoy this show, where do we typically direct them to?
Typically, we direct them to wherever they get their podcast from or supplychainnowradio.com.
That's right.
YouTube.
It's just that easy.
It is.
So with no further ado, let's bring on and welcome our featured guests here today, Eric Rempel, Chief Innovation Officer with Redwood Logistics. Eric, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How you doing, fellas?
Good, good.
Fantastic. Really excited to learn more about the Redwood story. We've been pleased to feature a few of your colleagues in earlier shows. It's fascinating. Y'all have been on the move, to put it simply. So we'll talk about that in just a minute. But for starters, Will and Greg, don't y'all want to learn a little bit more about Eric Rempel?
Right?
Yes.
Let's get his story. So Eric, before we talk Redwood Logistics, let's dive into your story a little bit. So where are you from? And you know, give us the goods on your upbringing a little bit.
Yeah, sure. Well, first, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. And this is a great show. So honored to be here. You know, I'm kind of your typical immigrant story. I was born here in the United States, born and raised in Chicago. My parents came here from the former Soviet Union with not much besides my sister and the stuff they had on them. So, you know, very fortunate to be born in this country and to have the opportunities that it brings. Which also means that, you know, my dad was always a tiger mom growing up and telling me to study constantly and read. And, you know, when I finished that, read another book. So that kind of pressure was always on top of me, but I don't think that's anything special. But it's been great, you know, a very traditional upbringing. Just, you know, I'm always math and science leaning, but, you know, nothing out of the ordinary. And, you know, just happy to, you know, share that part.
What part of the Soviet Union? Any particular country or the main Russian part or what?
No, so they're from a republic, Moldova, which is
the landlocked
country between Romania and Ukraine.
Yes.
Yeah, one of the poorest in Eastern Europe. So we got that record, which is awesome.
One of our scientists at Blue Ridge was from Moldova, of all things. I actually studied Soviet politics in college, so I'm familiar with the area. So.
Yeah, which means that the history says that someone probably died of alcohol poisoning at some
Yeah, it's amazing when you look at where that country is, how they can be landlocked. I mean, it was like somebody slipped the country in under there.
Right.
Right. Just to keep them from the sea.
Amazing. Yeah, absolutely.
So let's talk, before we dive into your professional journey, you live in incredible city of Chicago. What's something, and born and raised there, what's something that you really love about the city you live in?
Well, you know, with COVID right now, it's obviously tougher, but you can still make everything work, you know, especially with two kids right now. I'm just having a great time. We're out on bike rides all the time, taking advantage of the great weather. You know, for a lockdown summer, the weather in Chicago has been absolutely fantastic this summer. And just spending as much time as I can with them, because, you know, before this all happened, I was always at the office or on the road or traveling or, you know, staying in some hotel. And, you know, you find a way to be productive, but also appreciate your family now. And it's great. At the beginning, I was losing my mind, like we all were, I'm sure. But, you know, there's a lot of good things about it, too.
All right. One last question. So you were talking earlier about your parents' advice, endless advice as you're growing up. And your children are a little bit young, 5 and 3, but is there one thing that you're really advising your 5-year-old? What's the one piece of advice you go back to with him or her regularly?
Well, my boy is still just a monster that loves to make a mess. So just, you know, we're just trying to survive there. But with my girl, it's just facilitating whatever she wants to do. If she's interested in something or if she wants to play, you know, I was so lucky. You know, we didn't have much growing up, but in 1985, my dad brought home like an old Dell 286 computer, and that like changed my life, and that kind of got me down the track that I'm in and led to, you know, some business ventures and, you know, just, you know, becoming part of who I am, where he brought out something in me that I didn't even know I had. So just trying to, you know, facilitate what she enjoys, and, you know, she loves drawing, so I draw with her all the time. Just stuff like that it's been awesome. You know, not going to sugarcoat it.
That was a well-worded question, Scott, because I think essentially what you're asking is, in what way have you become your parents? Right. How is it your parents are going, I taught you that? Yeah.
Keep driving, Greg.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about your professional journey. So I'm interested in who besides your parents might have influenced, you know, how you see the world or how you've driven your career, or how it might have pivoted throughout your career. But also tell us a little bit about how you came up through the ranks before you got to Redwood.
Yeah, you know, it was always just kind of, you know, trying to figure out a way to hustle when, you know, my parents, when they did come here, they wanted me to grow up in a community that had good schools, right? So we made it to that suburb, but we didn't have, you know, we didn't have much money. So, you know, just kind of seeing a lot of kids that had a lot of money, it was fine. It didn't bother me much, but I wanted to earn it on my own. So it got me to a place where, you know, I did what I could, you know, garage sales as a kid. And then once I, you know, got a little bit older with some friends in high school, we started building websites that lasted through college and, you know, met some neat folks. And it's actually a way in which I met some of the Redwood folks was through that business that I had, but that comes later. And it was just, you know, figuring out a way to do something that I really enjoyed, which was always a combination of like art and technology, and merging those things together and making people happy at the end of the day, where they had like a vision for how they want to see something. And, you know, I have the ability to make that happen. And that's a really rewarding feeling that I was fortunate enough to learn when I was young.
You know, it's interesting. I think a lot of people also, after they went crazy during the pandemic, a lot of people have come around to that, asking themselves that question, why am I doing this? Right. I mean, people have had a lot of time to reflect. And so it's interesting that you knew that from a really early age. Yeah. So tell us about how your business, you know, or how it led up to you getting to Redwood. I'm interested in that story too.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to talk about like a total random journey, that's really what it is. And I think, you know, we were chatting before, you know, earlier that, you know, most folks in supply chain didn't come from supply chain, but that's starting to change. You said, you know, I was one of those folks that didn't come from supply chain. So my background in college was studying computer engineering and math. So I did stuff like chip design and, you know, super exciting stuff like that for any of your listeners that care. But, you know, I absolutely loved it. But I graduated right after 9/11. So the job market was not great. And it was tough. There were a lot of hiring freezes at, you know, chip makers and traditional places that, you know, you get recruited to when you've got that kind of degree. So, I did what I could, and I found an engineering shop in the Chicago area that, you know, had a neat product and some neat industrial machinery that they were building, but, they didn't have the money to pay full time. So I took a part-time job working there for a while, while the market was still, you know, totally in the dumps. And I just learned a ton. I learned a lot of practical application for what I learned at school, and ended up building some machinery that created a lot of the cookies that come out of like Pillsbury and Kraft and Pepperidge Farm machines, where we just cut food at super duper high speeds, and it goes off into the packaging systems after that. So learned a ton and helped get that company going down a positive trajectory, but quickly learned that, you know, the organization wasn't being run that well at the top, and it was time for me to go. So at that time, when I was making those machines, I was using Redwood to do my logistics and to move my machines, you know, across the country. And, you know, that relationship was always there. We were just friends and some folks I knew, you know, from earlier in my life. And I got a phone call that they wanted to do a website and, you know, just make a, this is 2003, 2004. So they wanted a website for the business. And I figured, well, you know, I'm about to go to business school. I'd taken the MBA and I was going down that path. And I walked into You know, for the Chicago listeners, XRT is playing. It's like a local rock, you know, station in Chicago. XRT is playing on the radio, and, you know, like everyone's just on the phone and having fun, your traditional brokerage. And I was just blown away by the energy, and that it didn't have to be cubicles up, stuffy, traditional work environment. And that piqued my interest immediately. At which point then I learned what they did. And from there, you know, the relationship began.
So did you go on to school and then go to Redwood, or?
Never made it to school.
I mean, get into it, right? Yeah, I think that when you find that right place, that's, it's good to do that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I'll tell you a story later offline here.
Yeah, it goes both ways for sure. But for me, at least, I was learning just drinking from a fire hose daily, and, you know, not even having the time to think about going to school after I decided to hook up with those, you know, those folks was kind of giving me the answer I was looking for.
School of life.
Yeah.
So take us a little bit through your journey at Redwood Logistics and a little bit about what the company does, and, you know, and share that with our audience.
Yeah. So it's a really entrepreneurial organization, you know, has been from day one. So I was fortunate to hook up with the guys that started it. It started in 2001, so 3 years before I got there. And it was a traditional, you know, C.H. Robinson defector, you know, former American backhaulers organization where, you know, the story goes four guys in a card table, and that's what it was. You know, one of those guys is now our, you know, our president who was at the the ranks, right? So we've grown and matured and gone through that process. But it was a brokerage through and through, and I joined it when it was a brokerage. But there was that hustle that I was telling you about earlier that was fascinating. And right around the time I came on board, we quickly decided to, you know, I explained to them my technology skills, and they kind of knew me already. So we put a team together and we started building our own TMS for the organization. At the same time, started a trucking company, right? So went asset-based as well, you know, just because our customers were telling us that they wanted, you know, that as part of our portfolio, you know, and it's that entrepreneurial spirit that grew, which is we're willing to take a calculated but lower risk chance on things. And that still continues all the way through today to where we are a much different organization than we were back there. But that energy, right, those roots still are strong today.
It's good. That's a good culture. Appropriately dangerous, right? So, so your role, Chief Innovation Officer. I bet a lot of people don't know what that role means, and I bet the people that do know what that role means probably don't know what you do on a day-to-day basis. So share a little bit of that with us.
Well, sometimes I don't know what it means. So, in fairness, right?
Right. I mean, I think that it's the entrepreneurial spirit of your culture, I imagine, to some extent.
It really is. You know, I play the role of CTO and CIO, you know, whatever that really means for an organization of our size as we've been growing. But we brought in some really talented folks from, you know, from Echo and XPO to play those roles today. And right now, you know, a big thing of what I do, and you know, I think we'll get to talking about Redwood Connect later, but, you know, after having built that, which was, you know, one of our largest innovations, now is the time to help, you know, and what I'm doing here, quite honestly, on this podcast, you know, let folks know what that innovation does, what it means, helping evangelizing it internally and externally. You know, you still have to sell it internally. You need to let people know what this new thing does that they didn't know existed, and therefore they never desired it before they didn't know it existed. So you have to help, you know, create a groundswell, because we do believe that we have something that's pretty game changing. But at the same time, folks need to recognize the challenges that it solves. So, you know, to kind of go back to your question, what is it that I do? I help talk about the innovations that we've created, but I also, when there's a tough challenge or a customer asks us for something absurd, or which is a good thing, right? Absurd in a good way. You know, I'll get involved in the middle of that quickly and just kind of, you know, at a high level architect where that fits into our organization. And then we've got really talented folks that run with it from there that just do a great job.
So I got to ask you, what is your favorite, or maybe the one you see the most interest in, of your innovations that you present?
Yeah, for what we've created, it's the Connect platform. So we built this whole thing in a totally different way than we've done anything before. The architecture, the type of compute resources we use, the fact that, you know, it's built in a serverless fashion, it's this incredible platform that basically lets you solve problems without writing code. And we're using it to do data integrations, trading partner integrations, sending data to data warehouses, moving, you know, really tough, you know, pieces of information from one system to another as if those systems natively talk to each other. So that right there, to anyone who's lived their last 16 years like I have in logistics, where every problem has to do with things not communicating, whether that's humans not communicating or systems being unable to communicate, it changes everything.
So, hey, I know we're going to talk disruption in a second, Will, but one quick question before we do. I love your comment there, Eric, about those absurd questions and how that gives you a chance to get involved and drive improvement, drive innovation. I'd argue that those absurd questions are what helps us make the improvements and really pioneer new things in the industry. Would you agree?
Absolutely. I mean, we had a guy at our company several years back, and he coined the term too hard pile. And when a customer or internally have something for the too hard pile, you know, that's when my team just jumps. And those problems, while, you know, others might say, oh, that's silly, why would you do it that way? There's a need and they have a pain point. And if we can understand and empathize with that pain point that they have, there's opportunity there. There always is.
Love that. And the four guys in the card table, that and the too hard pile. Greg, when I hear stuff like that, it reminds me of what you had at one of your ventures, hashtag startup life. And whenever you and the team experience something related to startup life, y'all just had a running list, right?
Yeah. Joys or woes or excitement, a win, a big loss, whatever. It was therapeutic for the most part. I mean, you just went up and put a hash mark, and then you could turn and evangelize or witness or cry or share or just go back to your seat. But it was epiphanal for people to be able to release that or express that. Yeah, that, I mean, those kind of moments are critical to the culture of a company.
I'm going to go get a bucket from a local hardware store, and I'm going to label it my too hard pile. And some of the things that we just can't do, I'm going to throw right in that bucket. So, Eric, I appreciate the idea. All right, Will, let's talk disruption. There's been no shortage of that here in 2020.
Yeah, so, Eric, my question is, so we understand, you know, we talk to a lot of different people in supply chain and customers and suppliers and retailers. And obviously in our current moment, everything in their supply chain has been disrupted and they're consistently adjusting. But one of the things we've heard a lot about is having to, because the overseas suppliers and products and sourcing has been certainly disrupted or largely just taken away, that a lot of companies have had to double down on their regional supply chain networks, you know, and do a lot of nearshoring and that sort of thing. And one of the things we wanted to ask you was how is Redwood seeing that amongst your marketplace because of the flexibility that you guys are, and certainly having assets as well, you know, just being able to provide flexibility and agility in a time like this?
You know, I think to kind of tie it into the too hard pile, right? Like yesterday's too hard pile is today's old news, right? So not to sound like it's old news and we're just, you know, kicking back with our legs up on the desks at Redwood remotely from home, but it's more of, you know, how can we take what we've been doing for a decade now, which is telling our customers, hey, your systems are awesome, your partners are awesome, right? And obviously with a shift from, you know, China and a lot happening in Mexico now, and, you know, we've invested in cross-border and, you know, we're dealing with the capacity crunch down on the border at all the cross-border towns and, you know, really strengthening up our capabilities there so we can be the direct service partners to our customers. From a tech perspective as well, it's, hey, if those systems are talking and your trading partners are quickly connected, then we can eliminate all of those humans going back and forth, whether it's paper or voice or anything else that just slows that process down, especially when you've moved from what might have been a stable operation of automatic, maybe EDI, maybe something else to, you know, overseas, now down to new providers in Mexico. So it's really on our end, can we orchestrate and choreograph the way data has to move in the same manner that we choreograph and orchestrate how freight has to move? And if we do that, we're doing a good job.
Is that what you'd say is sort of the biggest thing you've seen in this, just call it the last 6 months, as far as, you know, that transference of data, that communication being the biggest trend?
I think for the organizations that have set up their data and their connectivity strategies, they're a step ahead of the game. You know, they actually can be more nimble and more agile and maybe hook up more trading partners so that when someone is out of capacity, right, whether it's for transportation or the actual product itself, right, they can react more appropriately. But I do think that it's just a general theme that everyone is marching towards and has been for, again, you know, we could say a decade, but for sure longer than that. It's just technology is getting better. And it's just a trend that's continuing to happen. But COVID just, you know, gave it a shot of adrenaline.
You've already touched on Redwood Connect 2.0. And I love how you put it, that you can solve problems without writing code. For the non-technologist in me, that is a beautiful thing to hear, right? Because there's a reason I got out of computer science when I was in school, because I was terrible at coding. Let's talk more about that, because that's a huge announcement. It came out, I think, in July. Is that right? July was when you made the splash with it?
I'll be honest, I have a hard time remembering what day it is today, but I'm going to go with that sounds right. Maybe a little bit before that, but yeah.
All right. Fair
Every
enough.
Day is Monday, Eric.
That's right. That's right. Let's when you put your customer lens on and you're interpreting Redwood Connect 2.0 and evaluating it, what do you think the biggest win or two is going to be for your customers with this big development?
Yeah, it's just low risk, high value integrations. So we've done this so many times, and we've integrated MercuryGate and OTM and a whole suite of products to, you know, the Redwood Connect platform, so that our customers can just connect once like a USB plug, and then we'll hook them up to everything else. We'll translate their data so it matches, and we'll even translate it back so that their systems can take the information and it's seamless. But what that really does from a non-technical perspective is if they have a need for their systems to automate or operate in a more effective manner, or even just bring, you know, a simple new system into play like a TMS, it becomes this giant, like almost like you're jumping the chasm, right? It's like there's this giant question, can IT handle it? Do they have the bandwidth? Will they get it right? Do they understand the logistics objects? Do they know how to connect to SAP, or do they know what Oracle needs, or all of those things that we've done so many times? And then on top of that, it's not just doing it once, but it's doing it at scale, right? So we're moving over $3.5 billion of freight through this platform, where it's like, it has to scale automatically, right? So thousands and thousands and thousands of servers operating in parallel automatically, shutting themselves off when they don't have to be on, you know, saving our customers money. But they don't think about that stuff. They just know that I created an order in my ERP, and there it is in the TMS, and I can plan on it, or we can do bulk planning, or we can, you know, check for, you know, if things are on hold in a WMS and feed that information back in. So, you know, that's where our supply chain customer, and going back to your question, if a supply chain customer says, man, if I had the opportunity to have this automated, I would have all this time left that I could finally get to that slotting program I wanted to deal with in my warehouse or whatever, right? And it bridges that gap between idea and an automated supply chain.
Freeing up time. Holy cow, there's so much value there. And, you know, there's so many projects. You said it well, Eric, so many projects that folks can't get to because they're putting fires out. They're moving freight. I'm not sure if they're moving 3.5 B in freight that you are, but, you know, freeing up that time so they can make other improvements and deal with other items in the business. That's a huge value there. Greg, I know you're chomping at it a bit when you hear things like this and the tech that you're, just the technology side of the business. I can only imagine when you're moving that much freight and your aim is to make it that simple for your customers. Greg, what are you hearing there?
Appifying. That's what I hear. I mean, Will and I have both used this term in previous life, you know, enterprise class functionality, but app simplicity. And the demand for that is accelerating as we bring in these newer generations, Generation X, Y, and Z, all of whom are used to just turning it on and it works. That capability is so freeing for the user, as Eric talked about. They just know that it works, right? I create an order, it goes to the TMS, the data goes wherever I need it. I don't have to worry about plugging it in. The days of years long, $100 million implementations of technology, except for a few companies, are over. And the tolerance for that, even in those companies who are stuck with big systems that require that. The tolerance even in those companies is very, very low. And that's evidenced by the fact that the biggest, the SAPs and the Oracles and others, are responding to that and starting to bring down the overhead of their own implementations. So technologies like this that just plug in and work and make things happen, they're the future.
So much good stuff there. I've got one more kind of broader question for Eric, but Will, you mentioned simplicity, and simplicity is such a beautiful thing in this complex world, ever-changing, rapidly changing world we live in. What else did you hear there and some of Eric's perspective?
Oh, well, I mean, simply that, not to, that is the key. I mean, that when you, and behind Redwood Connect, the whole philosophy, if I'm catching this correctly, Eric, is that you do have all of these disparate, you know, people are, the way a supply chain can work, especially if it's a growing company, is that they're just hooking up different stuff as they need it, honestly. You know, they can have a WMS, TMS, you know, freight brokerage, all of these things trying to hook up together and talk, which seems easy in theory until it gets done in practice. And it sounds like that's the main problem of communication that you're trying to solve with Redwood Connect.
Yeah, that connectivity is so critical, right?
Yeah. You know, I mean, going back to startup life, right? It's all about, you know, failing and learning from those failures to be a catalyst for something else you do, you know. But it was before we started building Redwood Connect in 2013, we already had 4 years under our belt of doing connectivity the old-fashioned way, which was, you know, think of like a bunch of point-to-point connections where someone's just dragging an extension cord from every start to every finish, and we have a tangled web of a mess that eventually, you know, failed on us. So when I was pitching this to the organization to build it, you know, we actually called it the I don't know machine, right? Because what do our customers need? I don't know. What are they going to send us? I don't know. What do we have to do if their data fails? I don't know. And so we needed a way to handle all of that. And that was kind of the genesis for Connect, which is, you know, to your point on simplicity, it's just got to work. And we're pretty fortunate that we made that happen.
And it's just got to work. And oftentimes customers, they don't necessarily care how it works. They just care that it does work when right. They need it, right?
They don't care at all how it works. Not one bit. It just better work.
It's a utility, and it has to be. You expect your plumbing to work. You expect your power to work. You're not thinking about it, but when it's not working, you're complaining.
What an exciting development. It's been interesting to see just how y'all have continued to grow. But I always appreciate, you know, growth stories are always really neat to watch, and you can learn a ton of business lessons learned pick up insights and observations. But what I really like is when we talk with business leaders like you, where you're growing, but you're not sitting on laurels and selling just what you've always sold. You're really transforming the business in a way that you know gives your customers more and more. And that's where I think a lot of the secret sauce is. So if we can leave Redwood Connect 2.0 for a second, because I've got a broader question. Will, Greg, anything else about the new platform that you'd like to ask Eric?
I've got a lot of things I want to ask.
But, okay.
Yeah.
All right. So I have
go ahead, Scott.
Permission. All right. Good, good, good. So Eric, going back to your roots of implementing automation in factory floors, right? That's, I bet you could write a book about change and continuous improvement and automation there. But reflecting on that and reflecting on how you are on the technology side of the business, enhancing, automating, bringing more capacity and more capabilities, you know, driving more change. What's a great rule of thumb you've learned when it comes to driving change in industry? What's a couple of your best practices?
You know, I think I'll answer the driving change second. I think something important to people like myself, or you want to maybe put us on the slightly crazy spectrum of innovators, is just because someone's been doing something for a long time doesn't mean you have to listen to them. You know, I've been told no and no way, and that's nuts, more times than I can remember. You know, cause when you can see something and, you know, maybe whine before it's time, you know, don't let that knock you down. If you feel people's pain and you see a solution and you can figure out how to connect those dots and hopefully make money in between, don't let anyone get in your way.
You can't listen to the naysayers. Otherwise, nothing improves. Nothing's innovated. Nothing's delivered. I love that. So looking forward, looking ahead, right? 2021, I know we're all looking forward to getting into a new year, right? What excites you the most about the new year?
I'm really excited about where we're going to take Redwood next year. You know, right now where we're at with Connect is we built and launched the platform that integrates all of our customers, as well as, you know, our internal systems. What we're doing at Redwood now that that platform is able to connect our customers to the marketplace is, you know, we've securely created all these APIs so that all our customers can send in their data in their own secure pile and, you know, send it to their systems and databases that they care about and data warehouses. What Redwood is working on now is what we're thinking about, you know, calling like the Redwood Cloud. But what are all the widgets that we use for ourselves, right? Because we're an open ecosystem. We've always been open. Even our freight management, pick carriers. If you want to pick our competitors in your routing guide and not use Redwood, that's cool. We started that way and we'll always be that way. So we have this open ecosystem. And now what we want to do is take some of the tools that we've developed and some new ones that we've been developing and start making those more commercially available to our customers to use like widgets or a marketplace. So that'll be coming in 2021 from Redwood. And that's really exciting. And it's been great because, you know, for, you know, the last 2.5 years, you know, after we got acquired by private equity, you know, we've actually had the ability to invest further and they believed in us and our vision. And, you know, they say, you know, keep going down that path. So we are just now working with our customers to understand where their challenges are and figuring out what our product line looks like. We have a recent addition of a chief product officer, you know, new CIO, new COO that are really aligned towards our vision, which is just do awesome stuff for our customer, you know, find a way to figure it out and create these neat solutions. And I think from a work perspective, it's going to be great. And, you know, from a life and everything perspective, you know, let's get that vaccine and get out there again.
Well, it sounds like to me, not only the hits keep coming from Redwood Logistics, but it sounds like a really cool place to work. Eric, I know you've got a busy calendar and we've taken a lot of your time here. Greg, Will, before we wrap up with Eric, any final comments on y'all's end?
I'm glad to talk to another guy from the Midwest. When he thinks it's absurd, he says it's absurd. When the answer is no, which is almost never, he says no. And if it ain't broke, break it. So I just love the spirit in which Eric approaches this. He is the right person for the right job right now. And I think that confluence of the founders at Redwood and Eric, we're fortunate to find one another. I'm so glad you didn't go get an MBA, Eric, because it would have only delayed and possibly upended the possibility that you impact supply chain in the way that you have so far. So
I appreciate that.
Powerful stuff.
Yes. Right? Well put, Greg.
Yeah, there's so much about your story that I love. I mean, number one, that you're a Moldovan, that in addition to that other, to the other connection with Blue Ridge, which is, you know, a friend of the show, we've had them on. Nick Darmanchev from Archer Hub, we've had, he's a Moldovan as well. So it's nice to, but we're finding some supply chain connections over there as well.
Clearly, they didn't spend time at the beach. They spend it at class. So being landlocked has its benefits, right?
You guys were on it. You know, I guess I was just disappointed that your dad didn't bring, I thought for sure you were going to say Commodore 64, and I was going to be all over that. But no, I could see, I love that part of your story. And the fact that your school was, you know, doing machining that's impressive and unique. And again, leads to the spirit of what this podcast is all about. Like, how do people get into these positions and how do you get into supply chain? I mean, you did it with working with your hands and using your mind at the same time. I mean, that's a big part of this industry.
Well, that and Eric talked about the intersection of art and technology.
Yeah.
And what a powerful place to be, right?
Yes.
All right. Well, Eric, really appreciate your time. Let's make sure folks know how to connect with you and with Redwood Logistics.
Yeah, because they're going to.
That's right. So, Eric, how can we connect with you and the organization?
So you can reach me at LinkedIn, Eric Rempel, and our company website is redwoodlogistics.com.
Really appreciate your perspective here today. I love how simple you keep it. And I love the passion you bring, you know, it is so evident the unique culture y'all have at Redwood Logistics, and wish y'all continued growth and success. Thanks so much, Eric Rempel, Chief Innovation Officer with Redwood Logistics. Thanks, Eric.
Thank you, Scott.
You bet. Greg, Will, another great show. I love the visuals that Eric paints, right, Greg?
First of all, I can't tell you that we have had someone say this is what's coming in 2021 in a long time. I mean, everyone is so consumed with what's going on now, so that not only do they have a great vision that they're recognizing right now, but Eric is looking into the future beyond all of this and planning for how to bring additional benefit to their customers and to the industry. That's just really impressive. That responsiveness to customer need first before, that's not the way we usually do it. That's a really important breakthrough, to respond to the customer need and to turn that into what needs to be done and how to get it done is the right approach. Scott, you often say it, begin with the end in mind, right? And work back from there.
I say that.
You do?
It sounds too smart for me to say it.
you're quoting someone else, like
there you go.
I usually do, so yeah.
Well, Will, I bet that too hard pile is not a really big pile at Redwood. What's your final take?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the kind of thing that Eric and his team is here to solve, it sounds like to me.
I think they dig that pile, man. I bet it's a huge pile that they're going, no way, that is too hard.
Well, great episode. Really appreciate Eric Rempel's time with Redwood Logistics. On behalf of Greg White and Will Haraway, and really the whole team here at Supply Chain Now, thanks for joining us. Hopefully you enjoyed the conversation as much as we did. Hey, do good, give forward, and be the change that's needed. And on that note, we'll see you next time here on Supply Chain Now. Thanks, everybody.